Fundraiser takes place tomorrow.
Moorhead's mayor says university construction issues have been addressed.
A Breathitt County woman has died after swimming in Graceland.
In sports, MSU Eagles head to Austin Peay for Saturday night football.
Bud Luke has the stock report.
An 80% chance of rain tonight with a low of 58 degrees. Stay tuned for an extended weather forecast after this news.
Coal production in eastern Kentucky is on the rise, according to Tyler White. He's the executive director of the Kentucky Coal Association. Production in the second quarter of this year was up by 9.2% over that time period in 2016. He credits the rollback of several EPA regulations enacted during the Obama administration for much of that. White, though, says the increase in production hasn't yet translated into more coal jobs in the region, noting that they went down by 200 last quarter.
But when I say we've lost that many, we're still looking at, we had 18,000 people working, 14,000 alone working in eastern Kentucky in 2008. We were down to 3,000 in 2016, and now we're looking at numbers that look about the same, around that 3,000 range.
White, though, believes that number will grow in the coming months and years since new mines have opened in both eastern and western Kentucky. He adds that financial institutions have been showing more confidence in lending money to coal companies.
Governor Matt Bevin bluntly suggested Tuesday that some academic programs on Kentucky's college campuses have outlived their necessity in times of tight state budgets. Moorhead State University President Jay Morgan says the full story of that comment has to do with the state pension crisis.
If you look at the state's economic outlook, pensions have a very heavy bearing, particularly on Moorhead State University. So I think as the governor was making that recommendation, he was offering his advice as to, you know, what folks should do in order to try to control costs.
Morgan says MSU's 100 undergraduate programs are all viable, and he intends to continue to evaluate those programs on a regular cycle.
Responding to Attorney General Andy Beshear's comments that cutting state spending by $350 million was illegal, Governor Matt Bevin called him remarkably irresponsible. Bevin argues he has the authority to direct spending reductions for agencies in the executive branch that he controls. Meanwhile, the governor says he's trying to fix the state's problems.
We have to balance budgets in this state. He can, as attorney general, pretend that's not the case. But at the end of the day, we're required to actually pay our way.
Bevin says the AG's claims means he doesn't want money in the rainy day fund.
With the number of Kentucky children covered by health insurance at a record high, a leading child advocate is calling on Congress and Kentucky state leaders to keep the progress going. A new report from the U.S. Census Bureau finds that nearly 95% of Kentuckians now have health insurance, including all but 3% of the state's under 19 population. Kentucky Youth Advocates Director Terry Brooks wants to keep that going. He's concerned about Governor Matt Bevin's proposed changes to Medicaid, which Bevin has said should require skin in the game from those covered under Medicaid expansion. Brooks says it's imperative that the changes don't limit parents' access to coverage, because when parents are covered, it's more likely their kids are too.
We can't invent a system that makes it pragmatically impossible to qualify. Does it mean that the idea of some skin in the game is a non-starter? No. But that skin in the game has to be reasonable, it has to be thoughtful, it has to be appropriate.
Brooks says Congress faces an end-of-the-month deadline for reauthorizing funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program, which provides little or no cost coverage to around 75,000 low-income children in Kentucky.
The National Transportation Safety Board released a preliminary report today into country singer Troy Gentry's fatal helicopter crash. WKYT reports that the pilot controlling the helicopter that ultimately crashed was attempting to land an emergency maneuver that he had performed numerous times before. The crash, which occurred Friday in Medford, New Jersey, killed Gentry, a Lexington native. The pilot, James Robinson, reported engine difficulties shortly after taking off. He decided to shut off the engine at 950 feet above ground. Gentry was taking a sightseeing tour at the Flying W airport, where he was scheduled to perform later that evening.
A study on U.S. pregnancies between 2010 and 2012 reveals a startling fact that may have led to miscarriages. Kinsey Thompson reports.
According to the study published in the journal Vaccine, women who had miscarriages between 2010 and 2012 more than likely had back-to-back annual preventative swine flu shots. The study showed that out of 485 miscarriages studied, 17 involved women who miscarried within 28 days of having the shot and also had a flu shot the previous season. Experts believe it could be a result of age and other miscarriage risks instead of the flu shots. The government still encourages all pregnant women to be vaccinated, and other studies say that vaccinations are safe for pregnant women. Reporting for WMKY News, I'm Kinsey Thompson.
One of St. Clair Healthcare's major fundraisers happens tomorrow. The SCH Foundation holds its annual charity golf tournament at the Eagle Trace Golf Club near Moorhead. The event annually raises between $80,000 and $125,000 for the hospital. Foundation Executive Director Tom Lewis says much of that is because of the support it gets from local businesses who are supportive of St. Clair's healing ministry.
A lot of the businesses that do business with St. Clair understand that, and they want to be a part of this event because they want to be a part of that mission. They want to do what they can to give something back and to help us take care of people who might not be able to get that care otherwise.
The money raised by the St. Clair Foundation's charity golf event is used to offset the hospital's cost of providing care for those who can't afford to pay for those services. Over 50 teams will participate in tomorrow's tournament.
The Kentucky Transportation Cabinet says it will spend $75,000 to make repairs to the Dover Covered Bridge in Mason County. The historic bridge was built in 1835. It sustained major damage during a late July flood along Lee Creek. According to Cabinet spokesman Alan Blair, among other things, two of the span's six-ton steel support beams were washed away.
Right now, the critical issue is to get it stabilized so that there's no more damage that occurs to that bridge due to future storms or issues that might occur. So that's what we're looking at right now. Once a consultant gets on board and issues a recommendation on how to stabilize the wooden structure, then we will use that $75,000 to do that work.
The Dover Covered Bridge is part of the state Route 3113, just south of Kentucky 8, near the Ohio River at Dover. It will remain closed to all traffic until further notice. Blair says a timeline for repairing the span won't be established until a consultant who specializes in the restoration of covered bridges reviews the damage and offers his suggestions about what should be done.
Stay tuned for more of your local news after this.
Support for MSPR comes from The Bakery on Main, next to Pasquale's on East Main Street in Moorhead. The Bakery on Main prepares made-from-scratch breads, cakes, pies, tarts, and cookies. Glazed, cream, and fruit-filled donuts made fresh Monday, Friday, and Saturday. Catering for weddings, birthdays, bridal, and baby showers. Open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Orders by phone at 606-783-0101 and online at thebakeryonmain.com.
Moorhead's mayor thinks the city has solved some issues it had with the construction company doing the $49 million expansion and renovation project at Moorhead State's Adrian Doran University Center. According to Jim Tom Trent, Monarch Construction had, on occasion, forgotten to inform the city when it needed to completely close the section of East 2nd Street that runs behind the ADUC to perform certain tasks. Trent says it's important that the town know when that's happening.
I would put it out on social media. We would contact our law enforcement and contact our first responders, because here's the number one thing. You don't want a road closure, regardless of how temporary it is, to ever interfere with emergency services, ambulance, fire truck, those type of things, police.
Trent says he's also asked Monarch to properly tarp its trucks because they've been leaving some of Moorhead Street covered at times with dirt, mud, and other debris.
Transylvania University says the online harassment of one of its students does not fall under their non-discrimination policy. According to WKYT, Paula Garcia began receiving messages about being deported after a fellow Trancy student shared her profile, calling for others to report her to immigration. Garcia is a dreamer facing an uncertain future as part of the DACA program.
I want to be able to have a plan for my life and be able to be confident in pursuing that and being in the country.
Garcia posted an emotional plea for help on YouTube over the weekend, asking folks to reach out to school administrators. Since then, Garcia says she has gotten messages of support from the campus, city, and country.
Kentucky Power is traveling south in an effort to help restore Florida services after Hurricane Irma. About 150 employees and contractors are being sent to help Florida Power and Light, Duke Energy, and Tampa Electric Company restore electricity for the millions of customers without power. Spokeswoman Allison Barker says there have been 95 restoration efforts in Texas already.
So our Texas crews now have had their days off to rest, and that allowed us to go ahead and send crews down to assist with Florida. We also are looking to maybe be able to send an additional 8 to 10 people on Friday.
Barker says sending workers to multiple locations is part of the mutual assistance program. All investor-owned utilities that participate in this program agree to provide workers in times of major outages.
Kentucky Emergency Services are in Tallahassee to help out in the aftermath of Hurricane Irma. WYMT reports crews with the Kentucky Fire Commission and EMS teams from across Kentucky arrived in Florida on Monday. Michael Pointer is Emergency Director for the Kentucky Board of Emergency Medical Services.
I know when we came down here, we got a lot of smiles, and, you know, it's really important to help each other out. I mean, I hope we'd never have a disaster, but, you know, I would have open arms if we had a disaster and we're overwhelmed and have other folks come in.
Workers from the Commonwealth were sent to Citrus County, Florida yesterday to relieve other crews that have been helping hurricane victims there for several days. Kentucky Power has also deployed around 150 employees to the Sunshine State, helping restore electricity to an estimated 13 million people. Taking a look at the weather, tomorrow, rain likely, mainly before 11 a.m., cloudy with a high near 67, light wind, chance of precipitation is 60%. Tomorrow night, a 10% chance of rain before 7 p.m. with patchy fog, otherwise mostly cloudy with a low around 59 and calm winds. Friday, patchy dense fog before 9 a.m., otherwise partly sunny with a high near 76, calm winds. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low around 58. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 80. Sunday, sunny with a high near 82. Taking a look at the local temperatures, Ashland at 72 degrees, 69 degrees in Inez, 64 degrees here in Moorhead and Flemingsburg, 62 degrees in Winchester, and 60 degrees in Lexington.
On our feature segment today, we have Neighbors, Adrian Swain's conversations with our diverse Appalachian community. In this third and final part of their conversation, Elena Voltovich, an ethnic Russian from Tajikistan, describes her failed attempt to acquire asylum status for her mother. Hatred directed towards ethnic minorities in the country of her birth, being disowned by her Russian relatives for living in the USA, and the challenges resulting from her Russian identity in America.
My mother, I just made a decision to apply for asylum for her. I knew she had enough evidence. The documents, the weight was 20 pounds. When I turned it into the UPS to send it to court. At her court date, she was told that she failed to disclose that she was a member of the Communist Party, which everyone had to be.
If you're not a member of the Communist Party, you would not have a job as a teacher or...
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You would become an outcast. The judge told her she would not get asylum, and she was given a paper that allows her to stay in the country indefinitely, but she has no rights. She cannot apply for a job. She cannot file taxes. She's been trying to do the right thing. Thankfully, I have my church family that has been incredible. She's staying with friends from church. She doesn't drive. She doesn't own a car. Friends have been giving her rides whenever she needs to go. I'm away from Mary because I'm in Moorhead, but I know she's safe. I know that people will check on her, so I'm very grateful. everyone kept on asking me, so you're going to go and get your master's, right? And I would say, why would you think that? And they would say, well, it's something that you should consider. And I just never saw that in myself, you know, that I would be capable of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing led to another, and I ended up getting my MBA at Murray. And it was a lot of coffee and a lot of sleepless nights and accounting classes at 8 a.m. in the morning, which I dreaded. And a couple of years later, again, things worked out for me to come to Moorhead and to work on my second master's.
In?
Public administration. In Tajikistan, education is not encouraged, and I've always been a very curious child. I've always wanted to read about stuff, look up stuff. So when I would share little tidbits of information, I felt no encouragement. I felt like I was laughed at. Here, it's a complete difference. I enjoy sharing information. I enjoy learning it. Another difference, I guess, would be the freedom to associate with people of other races and ethnicities. If I were seen with a Tatar person, which is another minority in Tajikistan, people would talk about me for days. Oh, she went out with a Tatar. What a bad person. It's awful. And here I can go out to La Finca with my Chinese friends and nobody bats an eye. Just being accepted as a woman, especially, women are not encouraged to pursue higher education. They are encouraged to stay quiet, to become housewives, and there is nothing wrong with that. But in Tajikistan, it's the lifestyle should.
It's not really a choice.
Right. And I will one day have a family, I will one day have kids, and I will vacuum and wash the dishes and all of those things, but I also will have a career. In Tajikistan, you can't have that. You get married off when you're 17 or 18, and I'm glad I wasn't forced to do that.
Your mother was of Russian heritage, and your father was
Russian-Ukrainian. And I've been told that I think a whole lot like an American and very little like a Russian. So even those ties that I used to have, I've been rejected by them for being too liberal for them, for thinking differently. And I'm sure you are aware of the propaganda in Russia against America. I've had several distant family members disown me and my mother just because we live in America. They said it's no longer safe for us to talk to you because you live in America. So, unfortunately, in Russia, there is a massive wave of propaganda against America. And living here, I don't think I could agree with a lot of the Russian politics and traditions these days. I try to be very careful these days when I introduce myself. I try not to allude to the Russian part of myself because of what's been going on the news. That's in response to the Putin and Trump drama. So I just say I'm from Tajikistan. I do not say, which is the truth, I just don't say I'm Russian. I'm facing several personal challenges at this moment, but I've seen a lot of rainbows come out of many storms in my life. So I'm looking forward to the next rainbow. As I learned to drink iced tea, you know, all of those things that make a southerner. I feel it like a southerner in my heart. I don't wear camo. That's where I draw the line. I'll never wear camo.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Sure.
It's 4:49 and 64 degrees in Moorhead. I'm Leanne Akers here with Logan Pemberton, and we are so glad you've joined us on this Wednesday afternoon. Braxton Howard has sports in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR comes from the city of Moorhead, a trail town community in eastern Kentucky and located near I-64 within the Daniel Boone National Forest. Home to Moorhead State University, St. Clair Regional Medical Center, and Cave Run Lake, the city of Moorhead supports community livability, economic prosperity, educational enrichment, cultural outreach, and recreational engagement. Office is located at 314 Bridge Street and by phone at 784-8505 or online at moorhead-ky.gov. Another challenge. Good afternoon with WMKY Sports. I'm Braxton Howard. Moorhead State football coach Rob Tenier says Saturday night's game at Austin Peay will be another chance for his 1-1 Eagles to get better. While Tenier believes MSU is doing a lot of good things right now, he quickly notes that the Eagles need to be more consistent.
We've got to make another jump and just got to play a little better brand of team football. And you know, I like our chances to win a lot of games, you know, moving forward if we can mature as a team.
MSU will be facing an Austin Peay squad that is currently on a 29-game losing streak, the longest in FCS. The Eagles are 27-17 lifetime against their former OVC and PFL rival. Louisville football coach Bobby Petrino is looking forward to having his team on national television Saturday. Petrino's 14th-ranked Cardinals will be involved in one of the day's biggest games when they face number 3 Clemson.
Very good football team. You know, when you watch Clemson play, they always have a great defense, a real strong defensive front, fast linebackers and secondary, and do a really good job of playing together and playing hard. So we've got a great challenge there. We're going to have to be able to mix the run and the pass and be balanced.
Petrino says the game will be a great experience for his players and UofL fans. It's slated to kick off Saturday at Papa John's Cardinal Stadium at 3 p.m. Even though his team is mired with a 3-game losing streak, Round County football coach Kelly Ford insists that his young Vikings are getting better. Ford says they've learned some important lessons about what it takes to win.
We just hadn't got on the winning part of it, but also on the losing end, you learn from losing as well. And, you know, we don't like to lose. We don't want to lose in that category. But, you know, it's also good for our kids that, you know, things ain't easy. You got to work hard to get where you need to be.
Round will look to better its 1-3 record on Friday when they host 2-1 Bourbon County at 7:30. The Cincinnati Reds are back in St. Louis tonight for Game 2 of their series with the Cardinals. The Reds were blown out in last night's game, 13-4. Manager Brian Price says with blowouts becoming fairly common this season, he has tried to turn them into a positive for his club moving forward.
You know, you fall behind like that, it's a good chance to get some of these young guys in there. But in the same respect, you know, it's you want to keep the game competitive. So, as long as these guys challenge hitters in the zone, we'll be okay. But when we're hit and miss with command, you know, it's games like this are going to happen.
0-2 Tyler Malley will take the mound for the Reds. 0-0 Jack Flaherty will go for St. Louis. First pitch is set for 8:15. One other note from Major League Baseball, with today's 5-3 win over Detroit, the Cleveland Indians have now won 21 straight games, breaking the American League record for the most consecutive wins. The Morehead State women's basketball team has released its schedule for the 2017-18 season. WMKY's Brianna Robinson has the details.
Morehead State's women's basketball team will play 31 games this year, with 18 being OVC games, 2 more than last year. Their first game will be against Sacramento State November 11th in the Matthew Mitchell Classic, named after the team's former head coach. In the final game of the Classic, MSU will face the University of Kentucky. The team will play 15 games in the Johnson Arena throughout the season, but spend all of December on the road. The team's last home game will be February 24th against rival Eastern Kentucky University. For WMKY Sports, I'm Brianna Robinson.
The Morehead State men's basketball schedule was released yesterday. The 28-game slate features 14 home games and 14 road games for the Eagles, something that head coach Preston Spradlin is a big fan of.
I do like that. It gives us a chance to play here in Johnson Arena, which is always a special environment. I think we've got a lot of excitement, a lot of momentum coming off of last season, and just great community support. And I'm very excited about the role that our community and our campus and our students, our season ticket holders, and alumni are going to play in our success this year.
The Eagles start 2017 with a home exhibition game with Cincinnati Christian on November the 6th. It's going to be a busy time for the Kentucky basketball program over the next couple of weeks on the recruiting side of things. The Wildcats will host 5-star point guard Emmanuel Quickley this weekend for an official campus visit and host 5-star small forward Zion Williamson next weekend. Both are ranked as top 10 players in the class of 2018 and, according to Quickley, would like to play together in college. He spoke with Kentucky.com.
Well, I think we both complement each other very well. I like to get others involved, get everybody scoring, and he can finish, so I think that's a perfect match. He's going to talk to his mom, and I'm going to talk to my family, and we're going to see if we can actually try to get it done.
Kentucky is considered to be the heavy favorite to land Quickley, with Kansas being the Wildcats' biggest competition to land Williamson services. John Calipari is in South Carolina tonight to have an in-home visit with Williamson. Finally in sports, the Morehead State soccer team is getting ready to open OVC action with 2 key games at Jane Stadium. Head coach Warren Lipka's 1-5 Eagles will face Murray State tomorrow night at 7 before hosting Eastern Kentucky on Saturday.
We got two huge, you know, conference opening weekends. I think these are possibly the best two teams in our conference coming in, and we got them at home.
The kickoff for Saturday's contest against rival Eastern is set for 1 o'clock. That's sports for WMKY. I'm Braxton Howard.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics online at msueagles.com. Soccer will open their OVC schedule at Jane Stadium this week by hosting Murray State at 7 p.m. tomorrow and Eastern Kentucky at 1 p.m. Sunday. Tickets and more information from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Okay.
you're ready to go.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. Major U.S. equities, major U.S. equity indexes were little changed as Hurricane Irma barreled toward the East Coast while interest rates hampered financial stocks. And today, stocks, as mentioned, just more or less marking time, with the Dow Jones Industrials showing a small gain of 13.01 at 21,797.79. The S&P 500 was down 3.67 at 2461.43. And the NASDAQ Composite was the worst performing of the major indices, as it was down 37.68 at 6360.19. New York Stock Exchange breadth was roughly 15 to 13 in favor of losing stocks over winners. For the week, the Dow was down about 190 points, while the S&P 500 fell 0.6%, and the NASDAQ Composite dropped about 1.2% since trading started on Tuesday. Shares of major insurance companies were set for weekly losses ahead of Hurricane Irma's landfall in Florida. Both XL Group and Renaissance Re traded slightly higher today, but remained 5.8% and 7% lower, respectively, since Tuesday. Restaurant companies, including Fiesta Restaurant Group and Ruth's Hospitality Group, which operates Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, also posted week-to-date declines, and Outback Steakhouse owner Bloomin' Brands fell 2.5% since Tuesday. Home improvement and materials companies surged ahead of the storm's projected destruction in Florida. Home Depot climbed 1.4%, while Lowe's added 1.7%, and Lumber Liquidator stock added another 2.5% today, that on top of strong weekly gains. Shares of Equifax fell 13% after the credit reporting agency revealed a massive data breach that exposed personal information of as many as 143 million consumers. The company also said three executives who sold shares days after the breach was discovered were unaware of the event. The euro extended its weekly advance over the dollar after the European Central Bank boosted its growth forecast on Thursday. The Wall Street expects that the euro's ascent to moderate. The euro gained almost 0.1% today after a 1% climb against the dollar yesterday, and the euro finished the week at just over $1.20. The Commerce Department reported a 0.6% increase in wholesale inventories in July, and this was more than the 0.4% increase expected by economists. In the commodities markets, oil was down 3.1% at $47.57, while gold was up a dollar at $1,351.30 an ounce. In Europe, the Stock 600 index was up 0.15%. In Asia, markets were mixed, with the Nikkei down 0.625% and the Hang Seng index in Hong Kong up 0.5%. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Support for MSPR comes from Eat Gallery, exquisite art treasures, 46 West 2nd Street in historic downtown Maysville. Eat Gallery features fine jewelry, local artwork, mineral specimens, fossils, and treasures from around the globe. Eat Gallery also offers handmade heirlooms, earrings, bracelets, and gifts for any occasion. Open 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturdays. Eat Gallery can be reached at 606-564-5578 and online at eatgallery.com.
That's going to do it for Mountain Edition this week. We had help from Chuck Meraz, Arlo Barnett, Brian Courtney, Cody Robinson, Braxton Howard, Brianna Robinson, and Kyle Blankenbuehler. The Kentucky News Network's Haley Hansen, and with our feature segment today, Adrian Swain. This is Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY Moorhead, and translator W202BH Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Logan Pemberton and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Leanne Akers. For WMKY News, All Things Considered is next. It's 5 o'clock.